Hi, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, RyanBallengee. You can find Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net, although we really only use Twitter, sometimes Facebook. You can find all of our work, of course, at golfnewsnet.com. Sign up to be a member of GNN Plus, which is $10 a year, or less. You get a display ad free experience, you get discounts you won't find elsewhere. And if you're a fantasy golf geek like I am, you're about to get a huge upgrade in the quality of tools that you will have, and data, frankly, that you'll have available to you through the remainder of the season for that $10 or less, if you sign up for a multi-year plan, that you're paying for. And then you'll even get a discounted rate to what we're calling GNN Plus Edge moving forward at the end of the PGA Tour season. So head over to golfnewsnet.com, check out GNN Plus, and we would appreciate your support because we don't like showing ads. We just don't. So we want you to have a great experience, and we want to make sure you have fun. And we want you to have the best data possible. So we have a guest on this week's show. It's my friend Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is the owner of TGA Premier Sports. We've known each other several years now. He's been on the show a couple of different times to talk about golf participation. He's now a sponsor of Golf News Net, of this podcast in part. And we wanted to talk about a couple of different things kind of relating to National Golf Day being yesterday, April 25th. Happy National Golf Day. Every day is golf day. And also, I wanted to talk about TGA Premier and where it relates to where golf is at the moment and where it could be going and where it is going. Josh is tuned in of a guy to what's happening in golf, and golf participation is any person on any committee or in governing body or what have you. I mean, he's in those discussions, and he knows what's going on. And so I wanted him to talk about golf participation again and where TGA Premier fits and all that, and how you can fit in with that either with as a parent to your children or as a coach or as a franchise owner. And it's a good discussion. We had it yesterday, recorded it, so hopefully you'll enjoy that. We didn't do a show last couple of weeks just because we've been working on a bunch of different stuff, this GNN Plus Edge project, a couple of other things as well, and really excited for the things that are coming down the pipe. But this week is an exciting week, I think, on the PGA Tour. It is the only team event of the year. It is the Zurich Classic. It used to be the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. They've dropped the of New Orleans parts, just the Zurich Classic now. It's at TPC Louisiana in Avondale, which has kind of come a little bit full circle. It's one of the first tournaments I ever covered working for Golf Channel for the year and a half I did in 2012. And that was a really fun tournament, actually. It was the first time I'd been to New Orleans. It was the first time I'd done a tournament for Golf Channel in person. I had a great time because Steve Stricker and Ernie Els were a part of the equation. They were a lot of fun. The final round showdown, I believe, was Jason Duffner and Graham Dillette. And Graham Dillette, I've never heard a sound off the club face like Graham Dillette's. I've told him that. It was incredible. And now that I've formed a relationship, become friends with Steve Elkington and the crew over at Secret Golf, Steve, along with Kelly Gibson, who also follows me on Twitter now, I follow him back, were the player input designers, along with Pete Dye, on this golf course. So have a better understanding of the course from Steve and also having been there. And the Zurich folks really went, I think, and stepped out and said, we've got this tournament, kind of the dead time between the Masters and the Players. We're not the Wells Fargo Championship, which has a big purse on an esteemed club in a city that has a burgeoning population. Not to say New Orleans is small, but it's smaller than Charlotte. And we need to find a way to attract better players to our field other than making them Zurich ambassadors and effectively paying them to come in a wink nod kind of thing. So they wanted to get more for their money. I said to the PGA Tour, why don't we do a team event? Do a two-man team event. And we'll play four-ball and foursomes. We'll alternate each day. And we'll have a cut. And we'll offer a good prize money to the winners and FedEx Cup points. And because it's a team event, there's no downside to the official world golf ranking. There are no points on offer. It doesn't count as an event for the official world golf ranking. So there's nothing to be lost there for a top player. If you have a bad partner or a bad week individually, you don't lose. It's fine. That's okay. And it works out great. And so this is the second year for this event as a team format. Last year went to a playoff. You had Kevin Kisner and Scott Brown together. trying to take out, and Kevin Kisner made an incredible final hole eagle in the dark to set up a Monday playoff with the guys who eventually won, Cam Smith and Jonas Blix. And Cam Smith has just taken off from this tournament. I mean, he's top 30 in the world at this point. I would submit he is going to very soon be in the company of guys like Spieth and Thomas. I mean, Spieth and Thomas will probably wind up being all-time great type players, but in that company of great young players who are becoming something special, he's got that game. He's 26 years old. He's a little bit older than, obviously, some of those guys in that conversation, but not by much. And he certainly hasn't quite accomplished the same amount, but he's getting there. I just trust me on that. That all said, we've got 10 of the top 14 players in the world in this field. That is just awesome. That is great for this tournament. It's more than Zurich probably could have ever dreamed of having when this was an individual event that was almost always rained out. I mean, it's raining right now in New Orleans. Of course it is. That's kind of the date of this tournament, which is a little weird that they haven't moved it from late April, early May, just because the truth is it basically rains every year at this date in this tournament. If they just went to a different date, it would probably work out better. But that's another step. Still, this has become a great tournament. And this year they wanted to try to amp things up a little bit. So instead of playing four ball in the second and fourth rounds, they're playing in the first and third rounds. So they want to have alternate shot in the second and fourth rounds because they believe it will create a little bit more volatility in the Sunday field. Last year, I believe it was Ryan Palmer and Jordan Spieth made an early run, and then obviously Kisner and Scott Brown shot 60 as a team to get into the playoff. So they're thinking the other way. They're thinking, all right, there's a possibility of bogeys with alternate shot. There really isn't in four ball foursomes and four ball. So they want to create a situation where there's potentially a more volatile leaderboard. Because last year, ultimately, it was a two-horse race for most of the time that they aired it on TV. And that, I mean, that's okay, but I think from the television side, from the tournament side, they want people watching to think on Sunday that pretty much anything could happen. And I still believe that that's actually true with the four ball. I mean, if you have a four ball and someone shoots 57, they're going to skyrocket up the leaderboard, right? But it doesn't seem to appeal in the same way that foursomes might. A couple of players have lamented that change. Billy Horschel, who seems to complain a lot, he complained about it, but he also did qualify that by saying, I wish it would be the other way. I wish they would go second and fourth round with the four ball, but if they screw it up, if it doesn't work, they can just go back to the other way, which is absolutely right. You're still trying to figure this tournament out. Another part of trying to figure this tournament out is trying to inject some fun into it. And the players keep talking about it. They keep talking about this being a fun week. So you need to have a fun atmosphere, not serious golf. I'm just not that kind of person. I don't take many things that seriously. That's not the way life was meant to be lived. And so I am totally cool with the idea of having walk-up music. For the teams that make the 36-hole cut, they will have walk-on music for the third and fourth rounds when they get to the first tee. And so they get 10 seconds, which I think is criminally low, of a song of their choice. Three of the 45 that we had heard from as of yesterday picked Enter Sandman by Metallica. Four total teams picked Metallica songs. Obviously, three went with Enter Sandman. I forget where the other one is. But there are way other better Metallica songs for one. Second, why did you pick the same song as someone else? And a couple of California-based teams pick California Love by Tupac, which, again, great song, but why are you repeating? That doesn't make any sense. I don't see the value of having this. Everybody pick similar songs. And then you had kind of like the stereotypical songs. So Keegan Bradley and John Curran, they're from Massachusetts. What do they pick? The patron saint band of Massachusetts, Dropkick Murphys, shipping up to Boston. Then you've got the Australians. Both those teams picked Men at Work's Land Down Under. What the holy hell? Like, there have to be a pick Kylie Minogue, something. Somebody from Australia other than Men at Work. I love that song, but that's just so expected. Then you have one of the two South African duos Retief Goosen and Taran Van Aswegen, they picked Toto's Africa. Of course they did. Like, come on. You're better than that. The Scots, Laird, and Knox picked Flower of Scotland. Like, come on. We could do better. The one of the teams, I believe it was Charlie Wee and KJ Choi, went with Gangnam Style from Psy. We are better than this. We can do better. Like, you don't have to fit into a stereotype to make it work. You just don't. You could pick all kinds of awesome original songs. Some guys, I'll give John Rahm and Wesley Bryan credit. They went with a Drake song. I don't listen to a whole lot of Drake, but at least you pick something that's reflective of your personality, not what people expect of you because of where you're from or whatever. Credit to Bud Cauley and Justin Thomas for picking Circle of Life from The Lion King. Great choice. Makes fun of, that's who they are. They're kind of self-effacing, make fun of things a little bit, don't take things too seriously. Fantastic choice. We'll obviously hear more about this. Not every team makes the cut, of course. Again, there are 80 teams, so you need to kind of get down to the weekend before you can figure it out. So not every team is declared. And the PGAtour.com really had an interesting piece, as far as this topic goes, of trying to get a sense of how these teams picked their songs. I'm more interested in their strategy, but sure, it still works. That's fine. So I'm going to be watching. I didn't really watch much Texas Open last weekend. For one, I am not a fan of TPC San Antonio. I've heard great things about the resort and the property, but I'm not really interested in the Greg Norman design golf courses. I've played several. I've never had much enjoyment at them. It's just how they are. I don't have anything personally against Greg Norman. I just, for whatever reason, his design aesthetic just does not work for me. So I don't really find myself compelled by his courses. Not this one, TPC San Antonio at the AT&T Oaks. Not the one in Dubai where they finished the European Tour season. It just didn't do it for me. So I didn't really watch it. But I did catch the end, of course, because that's part of my job. But I was really enthralled by what the LPGA did out in Los Angeles. So they haven't been in Los Angeles in like a decade, maybe 12 years, something like that. And Los Angeles is, as you know, if you're a sport nerd, it's a tough market to crack. Like, you either have to basically be a winner to keep the fans' attention in LA. They're very fickle. So that's why USC at its peak was the ticket. The Lakers were the ticket. The Dodgers are now the ticket. And probably next year and for the next several years, the LA Rams will be the ticket because they're really good. And so the LPGA found a sponsor, or two sponsors really, Hugel and JTBC, and they combined to create this Los Angeles Open tournament. And the first year for the event, hopefully for several years to come, is at a place called Wilshire Country Club. It's just underneath basically the Hollywood sign in Los Angeles. And it's a super cool old club. It was renovated by Kyle Phillips, the guy behind Dundonald and King's Barnes, and he's done a ton of other renovations. He's a world-renowned architect. And he did a fabulous job at Wilshire. It just makes you think. I mean, the old-school architecture was just awesome to watch on TV. It was the best event to watch of the weekend. And you got a really interesting finish. Moria Jatanugarn is the older sister to Arya Jatanugarn, who was number one in the world for a while and is starting to kind of get back to that place. But Moria's been through a lot of things, injuries, other problems, and she hadn't won in 155 LPGA starts. She had been kind of getting to this moment. She definitely shown some improvement, was on the right path for, I would say, 4 or 5 months, but even going back to the tail end of last season, and she picked up the win. She won by, I believe it was 2 strokes, but she won. And the folks who cover the LPGA regularly, the Randall Mells, your Bethann Nichols, Steve Eubanks, folks like that, Ron Syrak, they all speak glowingly of the Jatanugarn family, that they're the sisters and mom are tight-knit. They travel together, obviously. They do everything together. They root for each other. They care about each other, maybe even more than themselves. I was touched when Moria won because Aria just lost it. I mean, lost it like a blubbering baby when the final putt went down. Even more so than Moria, who obviously had to have been happy and relieved and celebrating, but it meant that they both made it. And maybe it's just me getting older. I turned 35 on Monday. Not to say that I'm old, but getting older. But I find myself more interested over time in seeing people happy. It's just what it is. I want to see people happy and having a good time. I don't want to see people sad. I don't want to fight. I spent a lot of... I mean, I love to argue, don't get me wrong. But I want people to have an argument that ends in a handshake, not in a fist fight. I want people to be glad. I want people to take in how great we have it. That whether, you know, wherever you live, if you're listening to this show and you love golf, you're probably in a really good position in life relative to the rest of the world and certainly to human history. And sometimes it's worth taking a step back just to appreciate that and to also be grateful when other people can experience joy and high moments and take some joy from it yourself. And I take it now from the big things like these kinds of breakthrough victories. But, I mean, this is sappy, of course, but even watching parents walk with their kids like the bus stop this morning, I mean, I was, like, smiling about that as I took my daughter to her daycare. It just, I don't know. I can't explain it. I can't explain the biological changes that are happening to my brain and heart where I start just, I'm more emotional, I guess, than maybe I used to be or tried not to be for a while, and now I'm just kind of cool with it. And so I just want to see people, both these events, you know, talking about New Orleans. I want this to be fun. I want people to have a good time watching golf, not to be stuffy and serious. And this is how golf's going to be. Well, I'm going to go on a brief rant. John Huggan, right, I tremendously respect. He is was a very accomplished player, is a very accomplished writer. He bemoaned in a piece for Golf Australia. Of course, he didn't do it in the United States. He hid. But he bemoaned, basically, the atmosphere at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. And while, yes, there are certainly downsides to certain fan behavior there, generally speaking, it's a fun time for everyone who goes. Everyone understands the rules, including the players, and most people behave accordingly. All in all, a positive for the 1 week that we do that every year on the PGA Tour. But Huggan bemoaned it. He bemoaned the sponsor, Waste Management, said he didn't know the sponsor name, which is an absolute load of shit. He knew who the sponsor was. And talking about how this isn't how you grow the game, and this isn't what you do, and this is how golf should grow. And who appointed you the man to run golf? The beauty of golf, I think, is that you can make it what you want it to be. I can go play 5 holes of golf if I want today with my friends out of my country club, drink 2 or 3 beers, tell some stories, I don't care what I shot, and go home. I had a great hour and a half, hopefully less than that, but a great hour and a half of spending time with them. Or if I'm dead serious and want to get to meet my maximum potential as a golfer, then I can go out alone, beat 500 balls, figure out how to hit every shot, break 70, and raise my hands in triumph. And I've done both those things. And but whatever, that was my choice. No one told me what proper golf was. No one told me I had to go play at a place where there weren't tree-lined fairways and all the trees were cut down and the angles were huge and all that stuff. Again, you can take out of golf what you want, and that's the beauty of it. The opposite end of that is that having the freedom to make golf what you want means you shouldn't take the license, even if you have it, to tell people what their golf should be. That you know, if you want what you want and you like that about golf, then you can't tell someone who's having a good time, enjoying it, not hurting anybody, that they can't do something. And I think that holds true for tournaments. Now, the difference between a Players or a Phoenix Open that are relatively party atmospheres compared to their peers versus a Masters, which is super serious, or a U.S. Open, which is super serious. There are differences. People can like both. They can like one or the other. And that's okay. You shouldn't bemoan one or the other. There's room for everybody. Same thing is true in architecture. We have this discussion, ongoing discussion about what's the best way to build a golf course. The modern thinking among young guys who are doing, the relatively young guys who are doing the architecture today, are skewing what the likes of Robert Trent Jones Sr. did, which we had kind of tree-lined fairways, deeper rough, narrow targets, an easy bogey, he would say, a meaningful par, and a great birdie, versus maybe the modern architecture style, less trees, more ground, less rough, more sand than rough, big targets, funky greens. It's about the experience. You've got to hit great shots to make birdies, and pars are fairly accessible, and bogeys are okay. I mean, but it's not an easy, you know, easy bogeys, I guess, but slightly easier pars, if that makes sense. And you can have both. You can enjoy both. You can enjoy Harbortown for being very tight and taking the driver out of your hand for what it is. And you can enjoy Sand Valley, on the other hand, which I can hit driver on every hole pretty much except the par threes, and had an awesome time. I liked both. Again, golf has a huge spectrum of what it can be, and I just don't see the point going out of your way to bemoan golf one way or another. Most people who play golf play at a municipal golf course with a price point under $40. They're not playing places designed by the all-time greats. They're playing places designed by people who are on a budget or who had no idea what they were doing, but they created something that people enjoy. And you can't bemoan that just because they don't have access to a Sand Valley or a Stream Song or a high-end country club, you name it. Golf is golf. It's golf what you want it to be. And that, I believe, is the invitation the sport should make. I think that's how we get people into it. It's not saying, and I'm okay with, this is a segue into speaking with Josh Jacobs here in a second. There's been this change in the way golf has tried to perceive itself at a corporate level, the National Golf Foundation, which kind of is the advocacy group for the sport. And, you know, they said last time we did this study, or they did a study, you know, golf's worth 70-some-odd billion dollars to the economy. Well, they just came out with the new numbers for National Golf Day yesterday, and it was $84.2 billion. Well, they kind of changed the baseline of what golf was, because golf's not growing. I mean, there's less golf courses, fewer golfers, so, I mean, just everything tells you the number would be lower. But they changed the baseline. Now we include golf-adjacent or non-traditional golf activities like Topgolf or simulator golf or other things like that. Those things are growing, and tremendously, and they have a meaningful economic impact. So golf kind of wants to stake some claim to that. I go back to the whole point of the discussion. I'm totally fine with that. You can call yourself a golfer if you don't go on a golf course. If you practice some golf and you just don't have the opportunity to play very much, you could still be a golfer. That's basically the Korean golf culture. That's the Japanese golf culture. I'm okay with that. They're golfers too. So, but we need to tell people. We need to be forthright and transparent and say, okay, well, yes, participation on golf courses has changed for a variety of reasons, but there are still a lot of people who play golf even if they don't contact a golf course, even if they don't necessarily have an aspiration to do that. And there are a lot of people who want to play golf, and maybe these other pathways can lead them there, whether they want it or not. But we need to be welcome and opening to that. So I wanted to lead to that discussion with Josh Jacobs, which I'll play for you in just a minute. All right, let's talk about for one final time. This is our last spot with our friends at Health IQ. We've been talking to you about Health IQ for basically the entire season so far. And they've been a great sponsor, and we really appreciate working with them. But Health IQ is for life insurance, term life insurance, what you kind of do when you shop for car insurance. You're looking for the lowest rate possible. You're looking for discounts based on your good driving, your driving record, no tickets, no accidents. You get rewarded for that. Well, Health IQ works with top-rated insurers, life insurers, to make sure people who live a health-conscious lifestyle get the best possible term life insurance rates, saving up to 33% on their premiums. And they can do that because they can demonstrate to these high-quality insurers like Transamerica, John Hancock, go down the line, that you deserve a lower premium because you take care of yourself. You care about what you put into your body, and you care about what you do with it. So you walk when you play golf. You run marathons. You go to a gym. You belong to a special cooking club. I mean, there are a variety of different ways that you can demonstrate your health-conscious lifestyle, and that means you can take that to a health or a life insurer and get lower rates through Health IQ. Health IQ is able to do this because every possible indicator, every possible KPI, key performance indicator, of life expectancy, of general happiness, of life performance, goes up when you live a healthier lifestyle. And so I feel you should be rewarded for it. So if you head over to healthiq.com/19, you can check out more about them, get a free quote, and see if you qualify. Again, healthiq.com/19. I want to thank Health IQ one more time for being a sponsor for the first couple of months of the show. Really, first 4 months of the show this year. They were fantastic, easy to work with, really great. And hopefully you can check them out for a quote if you're looking for life insurance of some kind. Having worked in that industry in college a little bit as an internship, I've come to understand the value of having a very good life insurance policy and what it can mean for your security, for you and your family. All right, I want to bring in Josh Jacobs. Again, Josh and I spoke yesterday on National Golf Day. We spoke, we were just kind of in the offices talking to each other, and we got into a variety of subjects, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation because, first of all, Josh is one of the most honest guys I know. He will tell you exactly what he's thinking, and he gives it with real data and real passion. And his work with TJ Premier, founding it 15 years ago, they're going to come up on their 15-year anniversary very soon in the fall, and that he has helped, through his franchise business model, 750,000 kids in sports, predominantly through golf and tennis, but they're getting into more into team sports as well. And he has a model that works. It works in local communities. It allows people to adapt, and it gets kids introduced to sports through where they go to school or where they spend the most time. It gives them an education that's consistent with what they're learning in school through not only STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, but now STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math, which is great. And it all comes together as a great gateway for not only improving your outcomes from an education perspective for your children, but also getting them into a sport that's accessible in a way that typically is not. And so I've always admired what Josh has done. We've obviously done content here on the show with him, and we hope you'll check it out. We'll check out more of this interview with Josh as well when you're done. We'll hear the information about to find more about how to get involved with TGA. So enjoy this conversation with Josh Jacobs.
My friend Josh Jacobs joins me. He's this week's guest. He is the owner and the man behind TGA Premier Sports, and as it relates specifically to this conversation, TGA Premier Golf. I'm so happy to have him on again. Josh, thanks for being on with us.
How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Let's start with something, frankly, we were talking about before we started recording, and that is today is National Golf Day. Happy National Golf Day to you, even though, like, Arbor Day or Earth Day, every day is National Golf Day. But nonetheless, it's the opportunity for the industry to come to Washington and lobby you on behalf of the sport and tell everybody just how great and wonderful golf is. And it's a great game, but things are changing, and things have been changing for a decade, decade and a half, where we've seen 100 to 150 course closures per year. We've had declining numbers of players, so we've probably lost about 20% of players from our peak in 2005. And today, as a sport, we probably have about 24 million actual golfers, and we've probably lost about 12 to 1,300 golf courses. Where do you see the sport is now, and how have you seen TGA Premier contribute to the future of the sport through the 775,000 kids you've already worked with?
Well, I think that there's, you know, I think you've touched upon some challenges that the industry has, but I think there's also some good that's coming out of it right now. Number one, the junior golf contingent continues to grow, especially with females. I think the family contingent is beginning to grow as well because parents are learning that if their children or child plays golf, that they need to get involved as well because it's a time-consuming sport. So I think those are two places where we have a lot of opportunity. I also think short courses is a big opportunity for us. You know, we were talking about National Golf Day. We were touching upon it before as well. You know, the industry is now valuating itself at $84.2 billion, which is a 20% hike, approximately 20% than when it was last calculated. And it's interesting because it's a matter of how they're getting to that number and what are they considering a you know, quote unquote golfing activity. We're probably pretty sure Topgolf and some of these other off course or outside of the industry in some way, programs, facilities are being incorporated into it. And, you know, when you look at it, that's kind of where TGA has been the last 15 years. TGA is making the sport available to the masses, especially the children in elementary schools, middle schools, pre-K centers, and activating kids that way. And by activating the kids, we then have a direct conduit to the family and the parents. And so we're growing that pie, which seems from a traditional sense to be stagnant or shrinking, whereas the non-traditional sense, the TGAs, the Topgolfs, are growing. And it's less time consuming, it's less expensive, there's more social components, there's more family components. That's really, I think, where the industry is headed.
Why do you think it took so long for golf to start realizing that alternative forms of golf or alternative gateways to golf are actually potentially the sport's, not salvation, but its path forward? And that it took them this long to realize maybe we should talk better to kids and we should cater to kids and families and their parents, and maybe we should create activities that give them maybe something that's golf adjacent or close to golf, but not exactly golf, as a way to get them involved in the sport. Why do you think we were so stubborn for so long to saying, all right, this is what we do. We do 18 holes of golf, a lot of private facilities, you got to have a lot of money, and you're probably a white adult with you know, six-figure income. Why do we just hold on to that for so long?
Well, you know, the industry has a lot of challenges right now, as well as a lot of opportunities. And if you look at it, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, where the boom came, I think there was a very rosy picture both on the tours with the amount of purses, the amount of sponsorships, endorsements, and everything was looking really rosy. And we expected that to play into participation growth, golf course growth, et cetera. And then when you kind of had a shift in the economic times, we've seen, I think, and tell me if you agree, I think we've seen in the last 7 to 9 years a bit of a correction. And so the industry is now looking at alternative ways in this day and age where time is scarce. It's very hard for them to get out and spend half days, full days on playing golf. The sport takes a lot of time. It's very expensive. People spend more time and money on their kids. There's a ton of other activities, both for adults and youth and seniors, et cetera, for them to engage in. And so there's a lot more competition for golf as a whole. So I think the industry, and rightfully so, is looking at alternative forms to get people into the game, to introduce them to the game. Now, does that mean that they're going to become golfers? I think that that's yet to be seen in the long run. But I do believe golf has the challenges that I've named, as well as the opportunities to take these non-traditional forms of golf and get these people to the golf course, to the PGA, LPGA professionals, getting them buying equipment, getting them spending money at traditional golf facilities, and I think that's what's really going to make the engine run a little bit more than the top golfs and the other non-traditional forms.
With what you guys have accomplished with, again, more than 750,000 children going through TGA Premier, what have you found works getting, not only getting kids to participate initially in what you guys do, but then getting them to take what they've learned and what they've grown to appreciate and then become golfers themselves, whether that's with their families while they're still in school or even as they get older and start to pursue a life on their own?
Well, if you look at what TGA really does, And from a golf standpoint, you know, we have multiple platforms that we work off of. We have a golf platform, we have a tennis platform, and we have a team sports platform. And we've learned a lot from initially having golf and tennis into growing the team sports component. Individualistic sports like golf, they are grown at the grassroots level. It's a think global, but an act local proposition. And so what TGA does that nobody else really does right now from a growing golf locally is we have vested local stakeholders who are growing the sport. And it's a very loose term, growing the game. We've debated it before. We hear it all the time. It's like, what does that really mean? Whereby TGA is one of the very few programs that is growing the pie across all socioeconomic sectors. But we do concentrate primarily on the middle to upper income sector because they will be self-sustaining for the industry, and they're the ones who are going to impact the golf courses, the LPGA and PGA professionals for lessons, the golf shops, the retailers, et cetera, the manufacturers. So it all starts from the bottom up, and we are the lowest point of the pyramid. We concentrate primarily on introductory and recreational programs. Like I said, we bring these after-school programs to elementary schools, middle schools, pre-K centers, churches, temples, parks and recreation locations. We are getting clubs in these kids' hands. We're making sure that they have a fabulous experience. We're providing all of the equipment and everything they need to participate. We're giving them reasons to keep them in the game and in the sport, and then making that transition, that bridge to the golf course through a model that is franchised so that there are vested local stakeholders who have the success of golf first in mind, because the more kids, the more families they attract and get into the game, the better they do and the more they can feed their own families and really impact their communities.
I think that the franchise component of TGA is really important because, as you mentioned, the person who runs the franchise and their employees, they have a vested interest in giving people that top-notch experience, giving kids the best possible introduction to golf. What have the franchisees, as they've been out in the field and acting locally, as you talked about, what have they been able to teach you about how children these days take to the game and how their families maybe latch on to what their children are doing?
Well, I think what they taught me the most is that this is a business like all the other businesses that are trying to attract the youth into sports or other youth into other activities like video games. It's all about the experience and customer service. Parents, with the little time that they have and with a set amount of money that they have to spend on their kids, the program has to be excellent. The business infrastructure behind it, the customer service, the communication, those are the most important factors behind any business, especially at the youth level. And what I've learned from starting this 15 years ago is it's all different in every location. So parents expect certain things in Indianapolis than they do in, you know, the New York City and surrounding areas. It's just different. And so not only do you, as I mentioned, not only do you have to, you know, think globally but act locally, but you have to be able to tailor the experience based on the specific local regions. And of course, that's based on the culture, it's based on the weather, there's a whole bunch of factors that go into play. There is no one-size-fits-all. And I think that's the most important aspect that we've learned. And it's just different. And we really thrive on being able to fit that model, our model, into any environment.
Okay. So, you know, we have large organizations, PGA of America, USGA, Augusta National, going down the line. And they have tried to grow the game in large part through competitive golf, you know, PGA Junior League, drive, chip, and putt. And those things have been successful. But frankly, the reality is 99% of golfers are not going to be high-level competitors. They're going to ultimately be recreational players that hopefully enjoy the game and make it part of their lives and spread it on to their children. What is PGA success been in reaching those kids, the 99%, who will ultimately be introduced to the game, reach a certain point, but not be competitive golfers?
I think what the PGA of America has done with PGA Junior League Golf under Steve Tanner has been remarkable in terms of growth and being able to activate the PGA professionals. I think Drive and Chip and Putt is a great initiative, and it shows what can happen when you bring together multiple of the governing bodies of golf. Where I think PGA differentiates itself is we concentrate on the introductory and recreational level. We're probably the only company to solely concentrate on introductory level and produce that initial experience that you're really fighting for more than any other experience, because there's so many different things that kids and adults can do these days. So when it comes to TGA, we're that bottom of the pyramid like I was talking about. There's three stages for any golfer's development. That's introductory, recreational, and competitive. And the industry has an opportunity, I believe, when you look at the way it's valuing itself and it's defining what a golfer is through the different opportunities they now have to get introduced to the game, whether it's PGA, Topgolf, their competitors that are coming down the pipeline. There is an even greater opportunity than what the NGF says with the amount of people who want to play golf who just haven't, to be able to produce that introductory and recreational experience. And TGA is doing that and concentrating on that from a junior perspective that's then yielding results in the family perspective. And I think really from a unique concept locally, that's where we are excelling.
Do you think, going back to that number, that and that number varies year by year, but it's usually in this like 70, 80 million number that the NGF likes to throw. There are people who would like to play golf or be introduced to golf or what have you, but for whatever reason have just not made that connection to golf. Do you think that a model along the lines of TGA, which reaches out to children first and then brings in parents, kind of as part of that, is the best way to capture most or more of that pie that we can capture? Or do you think it is primarily by reaching out to adults and maybe giving them effectively a play TGA experience, but for adults?
I think it can be a two-pronged approach. Certainly TGA is kind of backdooring it to the parents through the kids, but it's shown that it's working. I think the industry, if it put its heads together, could create a model that could be developed locally to access both adults, seniors, juniors, funneling them from these introductory programs, whether at a golf course or not, into golf courses, putting equipment in their hands, getting them to pay for equipment, creating self-sustaining programs for every socioeconomic level. If it put its heads together, kind of like what it's done with Drive, Chip, and Putt, I think that there's tremendous opportunity both ways to do that. When you look at golf, it's a business, and it comes down to two things. How are you able to communicate? Because that's the big word of the universe right now is communication. How are you communicating with people? Social media, phones, video, et cetera, all of that stuff. How are you communicating with people? And then what's the value proposition? What are you providing for a potential golf consumer that maybe something else or another activity or sport isn't? And that could be from a time function, from an equipment function. There's all sorts of ways to skin that cat, and it's different across every local region.
Do you think golf does a good job of explaining its own story of the potential tangible benefits of playing golf? I mean, you're outside, you're there with your friends. There are also business opportunities, networking opportunities, travel opportunities. I mean, we could think of 10 great reasons to play golf that have almost nothing to do with the actual golf swing. But do we do a good job as an industry of explaining that to people that aren't golfers?
I do, actually. I think from a standpoint of what the industry wants to say to people, I think we do define that really well, the life skills, the time value, the family value that you can do when you get kids and adults playing together. The ability to play with all different ages, absolutely. It's as you mentioned, it's are we saying that outside the industry? So I think the industry has done a great job at defining that message for golfers, but I think we can do a lot better job at defining that and telling our story outside the industry, but that's just not enough. Marketing is certainly one avenue, but then you've got to have programs and the availability to take the demand that you have for the sport of golf and to be able to capture that. So it's got to be a two-pronged approach. It's got to be, yeah, let's tell our story outside of the golf industry, but you have to have programs to back it up. Otherwise, you're going to lose the opportunity to grab that consumer. So I think we do a great job at defining it. I think we do a great job at the messaging. I think we could do better at getting outside of our industry. And I think we can really do a better job at introductory and recreational programs for people to get into and then to funnel their way through the player pathway.
The one thing one of the two things I want to ask you about or remark about that I really love about TGA is twofold. One, that you have followed through with the service component of it to the point that you have your own equipment, that they're right sized for children of all different types, swing types, body types, sizes, that parents can purchase, for, make it one-stop shopping. So they have properly fitted equipment that goes right into their bag, and they're ready to take that next step within the game. And second, that you've brought in a STEM component that teaches kids golf's practicality for what their lives are, which is, by and large, school, learning stuff, becoming well-rounded individuals. Is how do those two components help not only kids enjoy the experience more because that you can relate it to their lives, but second, help the parents who maybe come into these their children's TGA experience blind about what happens in golf and what golf really demands?
Well, all we really try to do is be like the other sports out there. I mean, and like the other businesses that are introductory programs. So if you think about it, if you're a parent and your child's getting to golf, tennis, soccer, baseball, little league, et cetera, all of those things, you know what you got to do. Your kid needs equipment. For baseball, you need a glove, you need a bat, or sometimes the teams have bats. You're going to need a uniform. You need balls to practice with. Soccer, you need soccer balls. You need to practice with a net. You know, golf's no different. And so golf just happens to be more expensive than the other sports to get started in. And so what TGA did with equipment is we realized very quickly that there were a lot of different equipment manufacturers out there for junior clubs. And we wanted to provide a very cost-effective opportunity for parents to purchase. But more importantly, we also wanted to have a solution for the programs that we were putting on. And this year, I think we're doing 3,500 school programs across the country, and this summer we're going to be at almost 2,000 summer camps. So for us, the ability to give parents a fantastic option at a good price was extremely important to our success because it cuts down the barriers to entry into the sport. And so that's why we decided to do equipment, make sure that it was sized right. And that is critical, as we all know. That's a big movement for golf, custom fit equipment. You're going to play better. And when it comes to introductory programs, the sooner they play better, the easier it is to keep them in the sport. And with all of the different activities that there are for kids to choose from, if they're not having success or not enjoying a sport or an activity, there's a big opportunity to lose them, especially if it's not a team sport. So for us, we had to provide opportunities for them for it to be cost effective, but also make sure that we would have the ability to give them the best opportunity to succeed quickly. So that's why we decided to go with equipment, and we have, I think it's 8 or 9 different sizes for both boys and girls, so they're weighted properly and the correct flex and the largest driver head, junior golf driver head in the market. They're good colors, so we really wanted to appeal to both the male and the female segment. STEM was actually something that we've looked at over the last couple of years, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and now it's STEAM, where we added the art component for kids. That was a huge movement within the education world, and what sets TGA apart is that we make golf available at these places where it isn't. You can play and learn any other sport at a school except for golf. And so we wanted to be looked at as an extension of the classroom. So when we had that value proposition, that partnership with the elementary school, the middle school, the pre-K center, that we were working with them. We were part of their curriculum. We were an extension of what they were teaching. And also just from a practicality standpoint, how cool is it to be able to learn how golf works and how your equipment works? I mean, all the talk about, you know, Bryson DeChambeau and what he does, it's fantastic. And to be able to give the kids at that really young age that opportunity, it's really impactful for the kids, the families, as well as the schools.
All right, so for folks who are listening to this and they've heard me talk about TGA Premier, or they've either heard me or read about it, either at Golf News Net as well, and they're interested in getting involved with TGA Premier as a franchisee, what are the first steps that they can take?
Well, we have a lot of information online at franchisetga.com, and our success, you know, I keep mentioning the value proposition for consumers. It's the same thing for our franchise model. If we're not producing a good product and a good business opportunity and investment, then it doesn't make sense. And people aren't going to buy it, and we've been pretty successful with it so far. I mean, the approximate initial investment to get a TGA business is about $30,000. That's the all-in investment. And at the end of 5 years, we're seeing the average franchise yielding between $55,000 and $60,000 of profit with a business that's going to be valued anywhere between $75,000 and $125,000. That's a pretty good investment. We're seeing a lot of different types of people take our franchise on. We're seeing a lot of kids just out of college whose parents want to give them some practical business experience, who have a love for golf, a love for kids, and a passion for their community. We're seeing people who want to have second careers after doing well with their first one. And then we're seeing people who are currently in the labor force who want to be their own boss, control their destiny, and build equity and really be able to manage their time. So those are kind of the three big people, types of people that we're seeing, both male and female, seeing a lot of female moms inquire about the opportunity to work with TGA and become a franchise, because if you have a local market, you can do it part-time and you can bring in some incremental revenue into your household. So we really check off a lot of boxes. And I think it's just from a standpoint of owning a business and making sure that you are using your time valuably in this world is so important, and doing what you're passionate about, we provide a great solution for not only golf but the other sports that we've introduced.
And just since we've talked about golf primarily here, because this is a golf podcast, but you did allude to that there's tennis and there are team sports. So for folks who may not be aware, can you go through the team sports for folks? So maybe if they have experience in other sports that they have other interests in, they can know about those as well.
Absolutely. We started with golf. It's, as you said, we've gone through about 750,000 kids since our 15 years, and we started in the fall of 2003, so we're getting ready to celebrate our 15-year anniversary here in a couple months. We do tennis. We do have a tennis component, tennis business, in partnership with the United States Tennis Association. And then recently we worked with a little bit with the United States Olympic Committee to help launch our team sports franchise that encompasses flag football, cheerleading, lacrosse, ultimate frisbee, floor hockey, and volleyball. So it's the same business model. We just had a lot of our schools say, hey, we love your programs. We love how they're merging academics with athletics, and what else can you bring to us? And so we wanted to give them that opportunity.
Smart man. That's why we're friends. Josh Jacobs, it's always good to have you on. Always good to talk to you, my friend. Go to franchisetga.com if you're interested in becoming a franchisee, or if you're just interested in play TGA or TGA for your children. PlayTGA.com is a great resource to start as well. Josh, thanks as always, my friend.
Thanks so much. And just to elaborate really quickly, we're also always in need of coaches for our programs. It's not a volunteer position. We pay. So it's always great to give back to the youth and the next generation and to serve your community well. So, sorry, Rye, had to plug that.
I'll take the plug, too, as I was just a for-free coach for my son's first T-ball league. I would have loved even a little kickback on the time that I spent chasing little children kicking dirt. So that as well, playtga.com for more on that. Thanks again, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks to my friend Josh Jacobs again for being on the show. It is always a blast to talk to him. He levels out the golf conversation about participation and what goes into it. Makes you really think about what we as a sport are doing, what we're doing right, where maybe we're going wrong, and what we can do moving forward to do things better. And it's positive. It's going forward in a positive fashion. I think we're starting to get a better handle on the messaging and reaching out to people, certainly within the game. And just like Josh said, I think we can do a better job of reaching people who aren't as familiar with the golf message and getting kids involved and then parents involved as a result through something like TGA Premier is a great potential gateway to growing the game. So if you want to get involved, go to either playtga.com or franchisetga.com, one or the other, take your pick. All right, next week on the show, we will have the Wells Fargo Championship. We'll have some results from not only the Zurich Classic, but also the MetaHeel Championship for the LPGA in San Francisco at Lake Merced. They're back out there after a couple years away. And we'll start to set the stage for the players a little bit as well, some more stuff. Be sure to head over to golfnewsnet.com and give us your latest information on golf news and entertainment, of course. But also, head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. We still are accepting entries to go to the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship. It's now the Play Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship. It's in August in, as you guessed it, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. You get a great discounted rate, slightly discounted rate on the fee to play four rounds of golf with the tournament, one round of golf with me and Mitch Lawrence in our group. While we're down there, get access to the world's largest 19th hole every night. You also can have a package where you can add on hotel accommodations at the Sheraton right next to the convention center, which is super. It's right in the middle of everything. And you also get a goodie bag worth basically $350 worth of stuff in there, and that almost pays for more than half of your entry fee, in which you'll get back. And then on top of all that, if you play great and win your flight, then you're going to go ahead and get a sixth round. And I forgot to tell you about the 19th hole. Open bar every night with great hors d'oeuvres. And, of course, me and Mitch are going to be there to have some fun as well. So thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam to check that out right now. Okay, until next week, I'm Ryan Balogie saying thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.